Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Well, good morning. You have tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week. It is Friday, March 21st. You're listening to KRFY 88.5. This is Panhandle Community Radio. My name is Jack Peterson, one of your usual co-hosts for North Idaho News of the Week, and I'm joined by Chris Bessler here back in the studio. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. It's not raining yet, or it wasn't when I rolled in
this morning. Yeah, I came in 2 minutes ago, and it was not raining, but it's threatening rain.
It's supposed to be a wet weekend.
I saw like some 100% chances of rain, which means it will rain.
It's coming. Also with us this morning is, for the first time on our airwaves, Ned Newton, who's a staff writer for the Bonner's Ferry Herald. Good morning to you, Ned.
Morning, Jack. Morning, Chris. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah. Have you done radio before? I didn't ask that earlier.
I've done radio just once on a college radio station.
Okay.
So this is the second time, I guess, I've been on live radio.
Yeah.
I've been on live TV once for a crime report I did in Virginia when I was in school. But it's pretty new to me to be on live air still. Yeah, okay. And it's...
Well, there is a rule.
It's exciting. Go ahead.
Yeah. No cussing.
Yes.
Okay.
Ned will be fine.
I think that was George Carlin, right? Who made that rule?
Oh, well, yeah. He had the seven deadly words.
Yeah, words. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that was the case. Ned, before I go down the list of headlines, I guess you want to tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been in Bonner's Ferry, and where'd you come from before that?
Yeah, sure. I've been in Bonner's Ferry just for this last winter, pretty much. I got my start in November, and the first week I was there was daylight savings, so that was a nice welcome to
The plunge into darkness.
Yeah. The plunge into darkness, yeah, I guess you could say. And prior to that, I've had a little bit of journalism experience. I'm only 23, so it's still sort of my first professional experience right now, but I did study journalism in college at Washington and Lee University in rural Virginia. And that was a great experience for me. I covered, it was a town not too dissimilar from Bonner's Ferry. The biggest difference, obviously, is that it was a college town, but it was very small and lots of strong conservative values and tight-knit community. And I learned a lot from that experience that I've been able to transfer over And I also covered crime for one summer in New Mexico in a town called Española, about an hour outside of Santa Fe. And there was a lot of recidivism because of a change in the state constitution, basically, that made it really easy for recidivism to happen because people were held on bail less frequently. So that was another good experience for me. And I think both of those have been able to influence my, or just I've carried over the things I've learned, I guess, to this newer job.
In Texas, where it was immigration and, you know, the whole thing with the migrants, a big issue where you were at?
No.
So since it's a border state, yeah.
No. Yeah. At the time, no. I would say there's a lot of, I guess, diversity in that area. And at the time, it wasn't. I was in New Mexico it was two summers ago. And at the time, I guess that wasn't as much of an issue, at least not what I was covering. I was dealing more specifically on the crime beat, though. So I don't know. I can't speak as much to that. It's northern New Mexico, so it's less involved at the border.
Well, before we jump to the news, how did you get connected with moving way up north here, just shy of the Canadian border?
I get asked that a lot, yeah. Being young and from Texas and moving into Bonner's Ferry. The short story, I guess, is that once I graduated from school in Virginia last May, I kind of lived in and out of my car and did a lot of camping and traveling throughout the American West because it's a part of the country I've been drawn to for a lot of years. And I found myself in Montana for a while, did a lot of hiking there, went out to Glacier. And when I saw this ad for this job, it was advertised as being just outside of Glacier. And to me, that was really appealing. And I also am very drawn to the small town. And I have roots in small town. I grew up in a city, but my mom grew up in a small town in the Midwest. And so a lot of those values, I think, have been sort of instilled within me. And so that appealed to me. The idea of being local, being a local journalist, I think that matters a lot. Especially in today's world, I think that we could really use good, solid local journalism, people who care about what they're reporting on, doing right by the community as best we can. So it felt like a good fit to me. So like I said, I moved in November, and then I've been really eager for that warmer weather to come around. It seems like we're turning the corner on winter, and I'm really excited to see what this place is like in the summertime.
Well, Bonner's Ferry is pretty glorious in the summer. I'll say that. I lived in Bonner's Ferry for a few years, way back when, and Kootenai River Valley and the Selkirk Mountains and the Purcells on the other side. It's a pretty gorgeous place to live. You're going to enjoy the summer there, I'm sure. Well, Jack, do we have for news? This is supposed to be a news program.
Let's do it. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the news. I have a few headlines starting up at the state level. The House Bill 345, which is the Medicaid reform bill, I believe this the second iteration just this year of the Medicaid reform bill, 345, did pass both houses along party lines and has now been signed into law by the governor. It is effective immediately due to an emergency clause, as opposed to most legislation goes into effect in July of the following year, of the same year. But this one is now in effect. It imposes some work requirements and privatizes the management of the Medicaid system in Idaho. All legislative District 1 legislators, Razor and Souder and Woodward, voted in favor of the measure. There's plenty going on in Boise right now. It is, in fact, the highest number of bills in 5 years have been introduced by this 2025 legislative session. And we'll talk a little bit about a few of them, and in particular about our representative delegation, and how they've been voting. They, two of our representatives, or actually one representative and one state senator, Souter and Woodward, held a town hall, three town halls, one in Priest River, one in Bonner's Ferry, and one here in Sandpoint this past Saturday in the middle of the legislative session. We broadcast the Sandpoint one here on KRFY. You can find a recording of it on our website, and you can hear their, in their own words, their feelings on what's going on in Boise right now and what they're working on. I'll also announce at this time that it looks like they're going to have another one on May 3rd. Cornell Razor will be invited to that as well. So at Sandpoint Community Hall, May 3rd, that's a Saturday, this will be, and unless something amazing happens, it will be after the legislative session.
Yeah, it should be well after the legislative session. They were actually, 2 weeks ago, they were saying they were going to adjourn by March 21st, and lo and behold, it's March 21st, and they have the most number of bills ever.
So much for that.
That they're wading through. So that's probably at least a week, maybe two or three off. But by May, in that final town hall, it'll be a look back at what happened at the in the legislature this session.
And that will be at Sandpoint Community Hall. I imagine they'll be planning some other ones throughout the district as well. But I know of the one at Sandpoint Community Hall, and that's a larger venue, so you may see some turnout there at that one. Some local issues. The Panhandle Health District Board did meet yesterday and once again discussed the immunization informed consent issue. We'll probably talk more about that next week once the kind of the reporting comes in on that. In terms of parking. And here's another plug for our radio station. Why, it was just this Wednesday that you, Chris, were interviewing the mayor and the planning director. Mayor Jeremy Grimm and planning director Jason Welker were here on Wednesday. And of particular note, I think, is the, or at least of particular public interest right now, is the issue of parking and public parking in the city of Sandpoint.
Yeah, we focus down on that. Mm-hmm. And of course, if people want to do the deep dive, you can go to our website, krfy.org, and click to hear that interview. There are two things we covered there. One is the work that's being done to the city parking lot. Mm-hmm. They're going out for bid to do a pretty big rebuilding of the parking lot. If you've been in the city parking lot, you know the mm-hmm. pavement's really in bad shape. That includes a new entrance to the lot. They're going to close the two current entrances on Church and Oak, and you'll enter the lot from 3rd Avenue, which is kind of a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of right across from the bank building there on 3rd. But also the mayor talks about, the mayor and the city planning director, Jason Walker, talked quite a bit about the overall parking management plan that the city is weighing out right now, and they're in the process of doing surveys. In fact, you can participate in the survey. It's kind of like a, what do you think about parking right now, to help guide the decisions they're making. If you go to sandpointidaho.gov/parking, that will take you right to the survey. And if you're anybody that uses the downtown and parks down here, they'd like to hear from you on that.
There is, let's see, more local news, of course. I will also mention the impacts of the federal U.S. Department of Agriculture cuts have been felt here in Region 1, which includes Western Montana and North Idaho, and I imagine other places too.
Eastern Washington.
Eastern goes into Eastern Washington. Okay. And Ned Newton wrote a story about that in the Bonner's Ferry Herald that at least certainly caught my eye, and that might be a good place for us to start. I think those cuts have been getting a lot of attention, and of course that story is kind of continues to unfold. Things change as the courts weigh in on who actually has been laid off, who needs to be reinstated immediately, who's going back on administrative leave. I don't know, but let's talk at least about about that story and the impact that you saw in Bonner's Ferry. I guess to start off, how important is the U.S. Forest Service in Boundary County, which is the kind of your bailiwick up there?
Yeah, definitely. The U.S. Forest Service in Boundary County does a couple of things. Mm-hmm. The stuff I focused on in my reporting when I was talking with people and what seemed to matter most to people on the inside was how the Forest Service plays a big part in outdoor recreation. Mm-hmm. And it also plays a big part in one of our key industries, which is timber mm-hmm. and facilitating timber sales. The county has... The majority of the land in the county is owned by either the state or the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, like, that, like 75%, I think, was what.
Yeah,
was
thereabouts. And with that, there's a lot of obviously forest land that mm-hmm. has to be managed. And there's all kinds of different jobs involved in forest stewardship and in facilitating timber sales with one of our key. I think the largest employer in Boundary County, which is the Idaho Forest Group, mm-hmm. they are involved in timber sales with the U.S. Forest Service. And so there have been in the Idaho Panhandle National Forest in this region, which this includes Sandpoint, Priest River, Bonner's Ferry areas,
mm-hmm.
there were 37 layoffs with the a few sources confirmed that with me.
Yeah.
People who didn't want to put their name on the record because of job security reasons. There's a lot of, I guess, tension within these different local federal government agencies as to what's going to happen next. Are mm-hmm. more layoffs to come? And the thought is there probably will be. It's a systematic approach the government is taking to right-sizing. And so 37 employees were laid off in mid-February from the people I spoke to. And so that includes a lot of trail staff, the people who are responsible for sawing off trails in the spring to make sure everything is cleared and ready to go for outdoor recreators in the warmer months. We have about 300 miles of trails, but we also have campgrounds, outhouses, and just other things that require maintenance. And the ability for the Forest Service and our ranger district to manage all of that is hindered or handicapped by the layoffs that have happened. In Bonner's Ferry, it was mostly trail staff that was laid off.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, there have also been different specialists, technicians involved in facilitating timber sales who have been laid off. So at the same time, though, there's a higher timber target. So mandated from the top down, there's a target for how many board feet of timber, million board feet of timber to sell in a year. And it's increased in this region, but there've been layoffs. So there's a question as to how can you square that?
Mm-hmm.
And the short answer, I think, for people, there's a lot of speculation still, but people think that deregulation is probably going to come into play because a lot of these technicians are responsible for enforcing different environmental standards,
mm-hmm.
Clean Water, Endangered Species Act, those types of things. And I guess one more interesting point is there is belief that there's going to be a greater emphasis on forestry and timber within the USDA and the U.S. because an Idaho Forest Group official formerly
mm-hmm.
was recently named the chief of the U.S. Forest Service. So there's belief that his name is Tom Schultz. There's belief that instating Tom Schultz to that high-ranking position at the federal level for the U.S. Forest Service is going to create a greater amount of productivity within timber, the timber economy, and that's going to hopefully have a positive impact on our local economy here.
Mm-hmm. Is Well, okay, a lot to talk about.
Yeah, that was
there.
A lot.
That's all right. So we got 37 known to have been laid off in about mid-February, and I don't know if the there is an answer to this question, but of those 37 who were laid off, have any of them been reinstated? Are any of them back on the job now? Has that come into your reporting yet? Or
and to my knowledge, the answer to that question is no.
Okay.
But I cannot say for sure whether or not there have been reinstatements. I know that yesterday about 1,000 national parks employees have been reinstated across the country.
I saw that, yes. So, yeah, it's been kind of a yo-yo effect there with a bunch of federal agencies experiencing layoffs and then being reinstated.
But I can say, just to localize it even further, because the Idaho Panhandle National Forest, that includes Coeur d'Alene. And so within Sandpoint and Bonners Ferry, there were 15 layoffs from the people I spoke to as of last month.
Yeah.
So has that number changed? I couldn't tell you. I'll be the first to let you know if I hear anything.
I mean, of those 37 employees it seems like a lot to me anyway. So is there any kind of forecast on what the impact will be, say, this summer? How are things going to be different in the public lands around us? For, I guess, immediately the thought that comes to my mind is for recreation in the summer, and then long term it'll be economic impact of timber. But do we know, how things are going to change? Or
I think that a lot of that remains to be seen.
Yeah,
I think there's people within the Forest Service who are concerned about the maintenance of our trails and understanding that that's a big part of life here in the summertime. So just having a reduced trail staff that could affect our ability to maintain our campgrounds. And, you know, every summer it seems we get more recreators out here visiting. So
is the, are all the campgrounds going to be open, or do we know?
I don't think we know yet.
Yeah.
I think that I'm just guessing, but my guess is they will be. That is a pretty important thing. I think that when people say they're going to be closed, it's probably a little bit of just that visceral reaction to the layoffs. Obviously, it is something to warrant a reaction, depending on, I guess, who you are. But I think that in my best guess, the campgrounds will be open.
We'll see.
That's speculation. I want to be completely
Clear. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But with a smaller staff, you can surmise that the maintenance of those campgrounds were probably going to be reduced. So if that's kind of a shout out to the users. You know, take your trash home, please.
Yeah, pack it out.
Leave the campgrounds in good shape if you're using them this summer.
Anything more to say about the, I guess, in particular those, so the USDA wants to expand their timber production in the
that's the thought because of the restructuring of the hierarchy within the USDA with the new former Idaho Forest Group higher up taking on a critical position within the U.S. Forest Service. The thought is there will be a pretty heavy emphasis on that side of things.
Yeah.
And I guess another topic, just looking ahead, you mentioned what should we expect moving towards summer? On a slightly separate note, but still in a similar vein, you could say, there have been concerns within our local fire and water districts because they get a lot of their funding through state agencies that are, they're federally funded state grants from the Idaho Department of Lands or the Department of Environmental Quality.
Yeah.
And there's been some holdups with some of those grants, and it's money that's usually reimbursed pretty regularly, pretty quickly. And so when it's held up in a small rural volunteer district, if that money's held up for 6 months or something, that can be really challenging to keep the day-to-day operations intact. And I know there's one water district in Boundary County that has a $250,000 water infrastructure study grant that's been held up from the DEQ.
Yeah.
And so there's, as we move towards the wildfire season here,
yeah,
and we see what's happening around the country with down south most recently, but also with the stuff that obviously happened in LA, there's a growing sense that we're not immune up here in North Idaho to those same types of things. So having resources to combat that is critical as we move towards fire season. And right now there's some questions as to whether or not we're going to have those resources to combat wildfires in our volunteer fire districts, in our smaller districts.
I see. Fire season is always coming.
And we're quite susceptible to fires. We've had some big fire season. The last couple of years have been relatively good, but we ran through a spate of summers with some major fires, and including just outside of Bonner's Ferry.
let's in the minutes we have here. I guess, did you attend the Bonner's Ferry town hall, or did you?
Yeah, I did. That last point I brought up was actually something that was talked about at the town hall. That's how can speak to it.
Okay. How did our representatives respond to that point? Is there any kind of plan or any action that can be taken to assist the rural fire and water districts?
I think that our representatives are doing what they can to represent us here in rural North Idaho. Mm-hmm. Also understanding that in the House, there's less representation for the rural areas. So it's harder maybe to focus in on those issues. But there's another, just, I guess, more general feeling amongst Woodward and Souder that there's been a lot of quick fix decision making happening in Boise that goes against sort of the forward looking mindset that each of them hopes to have with dealing with Idaho at the state government level. So they talked about just the tax cuts that have happened are sizable, to about 4% income tax cut. They talked about Woodward voted no on that. He was one of the 8 no voters within the Senate. And he said it was because he's also a part of the Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee.
That's Woodward, actually.
Woodward, yeah. So he said it was, he obviously wants an income tax cut, but just that was pretty steep in his mind because now they're going to be deficit spending on a bunch of other things that he's got to, you know, shoulder the burden of some of those things as a Senate vice chair of the Finance Committee. So there's just thought that it's going to be hard to balance the budget, and we just keep reappropriating funds and also cutting taxes. And there's needs in rural Idaho, for example, with our fire districts and forest stewardship. There's things, line items being cut from the IDL enhancement budget. And so it's stuff that matters, I think, here in rural North Idaho. And they're really doing what they can to listen and respond to our feedback and look out for our best interests.
So, how was the turnout?
It was a good turnout. I think we did a better job actually at the Herald of promoting the event. And it fills up. It's a small room, but we get a good turnout.
Where was it held?
It's held at the Bonner's Ferry Visitor Center.
Okay. Right down there by the river, basically, right in town. And was the crowd civil? Was the decorum maintained? Because there's been a lot of town halls around in our region, but also in the country where things had gotten kind of rowdy.
No, it was, relatively speaking, especially, it was civil.
I'd say that was true for Sandpoint as well. And Sandpoint had a really, they filled up the VFW hall here, and I did a head count. There was over 100, probably 110 people in the room. It was standing room only. I know, because I was standing.
That's right, yeah.
So so the town halls have been well attended, and people are getting engaged, I'd say.
Yeah. Down here, this, I'm guessing, maybe this wasn't even a topic of conversation in Bonner's Ferry. Down here, I know House Bill 376 got some attention at the town hall. That's the concealed weapons on public property bill. It's, I think, particularly here in Sandpoint, which hosts an annual music festival in the summer that is held on public property but rented by a nonprofit organization, and they prohibit weapons on the grounds at the time, but the 376 would allow for firearm. I mean, basically, how would you say this? It'd be a prohibition on the organization renting the property from forbidding firearms. So if you're on public property, even if you're a leaseholder, you have to allow firearms on the property, and that would certainly have an impact here in Sandpoint on that. If on nothing else, on that annual music festival, which draws a big crowd and does prohibit guns to be in the venue.
And actually, some of the at the festival at Sandpoint, you may be new to you what that is, but that's a 8-concert series in the summer here where they get national acts. And some many of the artists have a stipulation they won't play a venue that allows guns in the crowd. So
the economic impact would be pretty significant.
Yeah, the impact on the festival would be pretty significant. So that's of concern.
Did
that come up at all?
No.
Yeah.
That was
probably not
not
as much of an issue in Bonner's Ferry.
That, by the way, has passed the House, but it's it is in the Senate and has not been brought to the floor yet in the Senate. Well, there you go. Anything else? Any Bonner's Ferry specific things you think that happened up there? Or
a topic that's been sort of on people's radar since November is a rural school facilities funding bill. We had our Lieutenant Governor Scott Bedke come up and tour Valley View in Valley View Elementary's, the elementary school in Boundary County that has been standing for, I don't know, close to 100 years, and it's potentially dangerous for students to be there, and we've tried to run a bond measure to replace the school now 3 times, and the bond has failed each of those times, and so our school district is doing what they can to try and lower the cost of reconstruction, and so part of that, Scott Bedke, our lieutenant governor, toured Valley View, and he said he was embarrassed to be there representing the state of Idaho. And since then, there's been sort of rumblings about a rural school facilities funding bill. And so that was something that was talked about. It's, I think, just made its way onto the House floor. And I guess the gist of it is you can get... It's a $50 million bill, but it's just a one-time $50 million sum, so it's not a sustainable bill. And you can have, as a school district, up to $5 million. And as you can have autonomy over your decision-making with up to $5 million. If it's anything beyond $5 million, then the state does it on their terms with the how they're going to spend that money for the school facilities. So I think in Boundary County, the ideal would be to get that $5 million, add that to our existing fund that comes from other property tax relief bills that have passed over the last couple of years, that puts us at running a bond that would be around $6-7 million if we were to get that. But a lot has to happen first. That bill has to pass through the House, Senate, sign into law.
Yeah.
And then we have to actually apply for and receive the correct amount of money. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, in the works, but like you said earlier, there's only a couple weeks left here this session. We'll see what our legislators can do for us.
It transpires this year. Yeah. I mean, often times legislation gets kicked off and it gets picked up the following year. So that's to replace the Valley View Elementary School. And the bond levy, the bond proposals that failed, what was the amount they were seeking?
So most recently, it was about $10.5 million.
Okay.
Last November, which was the cheapest, the least expensive bond measure for Valley View that we've had. And a big part of that is other bills that have been passed into law.
And how has it actually been getting defeated? It's just not, does it take a supermajority?
It's a supermajority for bonds. It's a two-thirds majority. And we actually had a bond to replace Valley View that ran a year or two back that was $16 million, and it got closer to that supermajority than this last bond. Oh. So I guess voter sentiment is trending in the wrong direction when it comes to spending that money. If trending in the wrong direction, if you're the school board
if you want that to pass,
you're right. Echoes kind of what's going on in West Bonner County, which we talk about a little more frequently down here.
Rural districts have been on either side of the Lake Pend Race School District here have been having a hard time.
Yeah.
And Lakeland down in Coeur d'Alene, they've been struggling to get their levies and bonds passed as well.
Yeah. Well, Ned, our time draws to a close here. It's it's been half an hour on the airwaves and then some. Any particular pieces you'd like to draw people's attention to that they can find on the news rack or else on the internet?
You can pick up a Bonner Herald at the Daily Bee office.
They do have, they've got that
right here in town. I don't know where else they can
find it. Just to leave things on a positive note, if anybody didn't know, the Bonner's Ferry Badgers basketball team are back-to-back state champions.
That's right. Yes, they are.
And, and they actually, by a large margin, I can't remember what the score of that game was.
I think they won by about 15.
Yeah. At the state championship. That's remarkable. So, Max Oswald was in here.
Yeah, Max does a great job covering that.
Yeah.
Have you made it to any of those games, the basketball games?
Yeah, I did. I covered a lot of the home games this season. And then also I was down in Timberlake for what we call the Backwoods Brawl, which is just it's our one district opponent, which is, it's a small district, you know? So it's a big deal though, to get out there and watch the Timberlake Bonner's Ferry rivalry. And that was a great game. We crushed it.
Is the basketball team a pretty big draw of
I would say so.
Enthusiasm in
Bonner's Ferry? I would say so, definitely.
Yeah. I imagine.
Well, there you go. Cool. That could raise support for schools right there.
Yeah.
Believe it or not,
right.
The athletics work that way.
Yeah.
So we got to check out. But
yeah.
Anybody in the room watching March Madness?
Why, yes, of course.
Yeah, we saw Gonzaga crushed Georgia yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. They
got a big one coming up against Houston. Oh, yeah,
that's going to be the test.
Yeah. I have them,
the one seed on Saturday.
Exactly. I have them beating Houston, but that was before, of course, we saw Houston, I think, won by 38 or something.
So, Houston's got
I'm feeling not so great about
They've got
that.
A pretty big size advantage, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Well, and plus, they were playing a 16 seed. Georgia was a 9 seed. And
that's true.
And Gonzaga beat them by 23 points. Mm-hmm. So it should be a good game on Saturday.
I think so. Well, it's an exciting time of year. Mm-hmm. Hey, it's time for Otto's Eclectic Mix and our regularly scheduled programming. Ned Newton is a staff writer for the Bonner's Ferry Herald. And I imagine you can probably read him every once in a while in the Bonner County Daily Bee when they pick up some Bonner's Ferry news. We look forward to having you back sometime with another kind of Bonner's Ferry wrap-up.
Thanks so much for having me out. It's been a lot of fun.
Good. Okay, you're listening to 88.5 KRFY, and Otto's Eclectic Mix comes on next and runs all day long until 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening to Panhandle Community Radio and North Idaho News of the Week.